Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on the Progressive Radio Network on Monday, September 2nd, 2013. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on Prescriptions for Health on the Progressive Radio Network on the first and third Monday of every month from 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time and from 7 to 8 a.m. Pacific Time. And remember that our shows are available 24/7 on PRN.FM and drsaputo.com.
Today you'll hear nurse Vicki's 2020 health tips at 20 after and 20 to the hour. And we have another great show for you today that's going to include, are soft drinks really linked to behavioral problems in children?
And a simple nutritional treatment for dry eyes that works.
And what's the best way to manage atrial fibrillation to reduce strokes?
And do cranberries really prevent urinary and other infections?
And can flame retardants actually cause high levels of estrogen?
It seems we hear more and more violence in the news lately, and not just with adults, but with kids, and the focus often seems to be on gun control. But could the solution possibly be something as simple as cutting out soft drinks? Soft drinks have been shown to change behavior, and of most concern are aggression and depression. So let's talk about the study on young children and their behavior after drinking soft drinks.
Right on. You know, this is kind of amazing. We treat nutrition like it's just unimportant. I remember when I was raised as a kid, we never talked much about nutrition. It wasn't talked about much in medicine. And through the years, it's changing a little, but it really hasn't hit the medical profession yet, that if we don't eat the things that we need to eat, we simply can't make the products we need.
Well, that's just the opposite of me. I was grown up with a mother that everybody called a health food nut.
Maybe that's why you look so refreshing and wonderful.
I see.
Could be. Well, this study was done on kids under who are age 5, and we have a lot of data on people who are older and on adolescents. And we know that when we feed them soft drinks, that a lot of things don't go right. But we don't have a lot of data on kids that are 5 years old. And there was a study that was done out of Columbia University and the University of Vermont and Harvard that assessed about 3,000 five-year-old kids that were enrolled in what was called the Fragile Families and Child Well-Being Study, which was a study that followed pairs of mothers from 20 large U.S. cities. And mothers reported their child's soft drink consumption and then filled out a survey that looked at behavioral things in their child's behavior for the previous 2 months. And what they found, Vicki, is that 43% of the kids consumed at least one serving of soft drinks a day, and 4% consumed four or more. That's just kind of like stunning.
I don't know. When I grew up, my mother never even bought soft drinks, so I never grew up with soft drinks, and I never even liked them.
Wow.
I tried Coke, and I didn't like it. Something that was really exciting when I was young and we'd take a trip was looking for those giant orange stands. And they'd give you fresh squeezed orange juice and ice. And it was like this big treat. But one time I was near the BART station in San Francisco. I think it was on maybe Mission Street Market or Mission anyway. And there was this gal there who was holding her baby and she was smoking a cigarette and giving the baby Coke in the baby's baby bottle.
Right. Well, didn't know any better, huh?
But I think that children are raised wanting to drink or eat something sweet. You know, in the first place, mother's milk tastes pretty sweet, and baby formula is sweet.
It had caro syrup in it to start with,
right?
Yeah,
it has a lot high fructose corn syrup in it or sugar in it.
Right.
And so babies are taught to drink things that are sweet. And when they're in the nursery, the nurses in the nursery, before they go home with the mother, are given sugar water between their feedings.
The mentality. I mean, if you look at infant formula, 30 years ago, it had about 6 things in it and not much in the way of nutrition. And the bulk of it was what? Sugar, high fructose corn syrup.
Well, I used to watch my mom make it when my brothers were little, and she put corn syrup in it and pet milk.
Uh-huh. Right. That was what they recommended to do.
And some water.
Yeah. Thinking that was going to give you all the nutrition you want. But we have a whole study that we did. In fact, we made a video on it. So if you go to drsaputo.com and put infant formula there or just put formula there or breast milk there, this video will come up and it'll talk about all the things that are in breast milk. I mean, there are thousands of things that our body needs. We need all the 55 essential nutrients. We're not putting that still today
in
the formula.
Fat and the healthy fats.
Oh, yeah. Well, mother's milk is made of what? About 55% fat. And it's all the right fats that a baby needs to get energy.
Well, these soft drinks have been shown to change behavior, but of most concern are the aggression and the depression.
Isn't that something?
And, you know, a lot of people complain that their children are out of control and they get hyperactivity and they end up putting them on drugs and stuff. And it might be something as simple as cutting out their soft drinks, because this type of aggression that they're referring to here that they did in the study showed that they were fighting, they were destroying things, they were attacking other kids, they had attention problems, some of them withdrew, they even had suicidal thoughts. So this is not something just to take lightly.
It also went with how much you drank, too. The kids who drank four or more soft drinks a day were more than twice as likely to destroy things that belonged to others, to get into fights and physically attack people. So they also had problems with their attention and with withdrawal. So you made a great point here. A lot of what we're seeing in the form of ADD and ADHD could be related in large part to this.
Might just be that they're giving them soft drinks.
Well, you know, I've been listening to mothers talk about that for 30 years, and the data in the mainstream research hasn't really shown that. But I think they're just mistakes in the data, because your common sense tells you when you watch a kid do this, what happens?
Well, when you go to the elementary schools, many times the moms bring in goodies for the kids.
Oh, sure.
And sometimes it's soft drinks. You know, it's not always fruit juice.
Well, it's usually cookies or candy or something sweet, the rewards of that. I mean, even go to church, what do you get? You get coffee and donuts. Right?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, the idea of good nutrition is something that's really not embedded in our thinking, although in the last decade, there's been a major change in that. And I think people are starting to realize how important it is.
Well, also think about that prison study.
This was some time ago, probably 30 years ago now, that was done in the state of New York. And what they did is they fed people in prison one solid, and kids also in school, they gave them one good meal a day, lunch. And what they found was is that violence went down 44%. This was a study done by a fellow named Schoenthaler, for those that are interested in looking it up. So there's a lot to it that makes a lot of sense.
And you know what else is sad is that Americans drink more soft drinks than any other country. But think about the contents. Besides the genetically engineered high fructose corn syrup, there's phosphates that we know are bad for the bones.
Sure, they cause osteoporosis. They leach calcium out of bones.
And there's artificial colors and artificial flavors, and those things we know can cause activity problems. I saw a television show once where they showed some children that had eaten or drank something that had artificial colors in it, and they were just like acting like wild animals.
Well, we saw it ourselves on our granddaughter. She must have been, what, 6 or 7 years old. We're coming back.
She ate some candy.
Yeah, she had West, right? And it took about, I don't know, 2 minutes, and she got so hyperactive.
And she was like, she was drunk.
I know.
And you were saying, if I didn't see this myself, I wouldn't have believed it.
Yeah.
Like if I had gone home and told you about it, you just wouldn't have believed it.
Well,
I think that people get addicted to it, and they're empty calories.
That's right. There's no nutrition in it. It basically is calories so that you can store. You're going to make fat out of that. That's what happens when you take in sugar, particularly high fructose corn syrup. It's converted right into fat, and it sets the stage for obesity and type 2 diabetes.
Well, this needs to sink into people how serious this is. These are not just words. This is something to seriously pay attention to and think about alternatives. I mean, when we say that people could have suicidal thoughts, and so you hear somebody commit suicide, are you really going to believe that it's because they drank a soft drink?
No, it doesn't make it. It doesn't
sound right.
Well,
what was that thing that happened so many years ago about the Twinkies and the...
Oh, right. Yeah, some of the murders that were out there, that was the defense.
That they ate all the sugar that was in the Twinkies. But anyway, just think about it. Now, fruit juice, do you think that's a healthy alternative?
Well, it's not as bad as, because at least it doesn't have empty calories. And if you have fresh fruit, that's a different thing than if you're having fruit juice that's sitting in a can or a bottle for 6 months or a year.
So maybe you could train your children when they're young to drink water.
Well, that's right. And maybe, good, healthy water,
but
that
maybe
is.
Maybe to flavor it with a little bit of juice or something.
Sure.
But you don't need to give them soft drinks.
No. I mean, this business of Kool-Aid or soft drinks or things that have high fructose corn syrup in it just don't make any sense at all. We know how toxic high fructose corn syrup is.
Well, at least some of the schools are trying to get those out of their vending machines.
Well, they have a conflict of interest there, because what they do is they're making a lot of money from the people who are making the soft drinks. They were making $25,000, $50,000 a year just to have a soft drink machine in the school. And there's been a big shift on the part of the school to change that, because what would you rather have? Kids that are smart, have a good education and good health, or a little extra money to try and have them do better on star testing, which is what it boils down to.
You know, I think there are some other alternatives that have become popular lately for the public, and that's like coconut water.
Oh, yeah, that's good for you.
Coconut milk. Mm-hmm. Probably the coconut milk would be better because it would feed the kids' brains.
Yeah, well, the fat in coconut is really a healthy fat, and most people think that saturated fat is really bad for us, but it's not. It's a very healthy fat. In fact, it's an alternative form of energy for people who have brain problems, like with Alzheimer's disease or senile dementia.
So instead of giving your child, you know, an ADD pill like Ritalin or Concerta,
well, exactly,
or something, give them some coconut milk.
Well, that'll help some.
Because that'll help their brain.
Yeah, well, they got to get off the high fructose corn syrup. And, of course, there are a lot of other factors that enter into this whole ADD, ADHD story, because a lot of kids that are hyperactive and acting out and creating problems are kids that have lots of problems at home. It's not that they have some kind of problem with their metabolism or problem that
Well, they must have problems at home if they're drinking four soft drinks a day.
Well, that's right. Although I'll have to admit, there was a time in my life when I had three or four soft drinks a day when I didn't know any better. This had to be 30 years ago. And I remember telling you, you know, when you take a vitamin pill, that I didn't think that was such a smart thing to do, because all it did was make expensive urine. And that's me, you know, who at that time didn't have much of an open mind, but have learned a lot since.
I know. I remember when we got married, 35 years ago almost now.
Yeah, right.
I was so upset when you would bring home soft drinks, because I had never, ever bought one soft drink for my kids. Well, I always gave them juice if I had to give them something,
well,
or milk.
One of the good things about your mother is that she really understood a lot about nutrition, and she knew that wasn't good. She read a lot about Adele Davis.
Yeah.
She was a pretty smart person when it came to, and still is today.
Well, that's why she's still alive at 97.
At 97, isn't that something? Right, and still concerned about what she eats. And she's so thankful when you bring her a smoothie that's got all the good things that your smoothies have in them.
Yeah, she really does appreciate that. She complains about the food where she is because mm-hmm. she knows.
Well, it's easy to train kids to like things that are sweet. But I remember when we were raising our granddaughter the first few years of her life, she didn't know what a soft drink was, and she had no idea what candy was. And we'd give her something like a little piece of papaya, and she'd think that that was wonderful, and she'd love it, and she liked the whole foods. I remember once she was chewing on a piece of garlic. Remember
know,
that?
Yeah, I do.
That was a little bit too much. But she really had the right idea. Then she goes off to school, and what happens?
School's what ruins the whole thing.
Well, it does. I mean, our schools are pretty good at teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic, and all the academics to make us perform well in star testing. But how well are they actually doing to teach our kids good eating habits and good lifestyle habits that involve exercise and stress reduction and getting enough sleep and how to have a meaningful purpose in their lives?
I've also told the story before on the radio about when I used to take her to the Faith Formation class, and it was our turn to bring the refreshments.
Oh, right.
And I brought these beautiful organic strawberries, and there was only one child besides her that would eat them. And the teacher was scrambling, looking in drawers and stuff.
Looking for candy.
Brought out some cookies and candy.
Got into her reserves, huh? Right.
And then I used to bring healthy snacks, or sometimes they weren't so healthy, but at least they were organic, to her class when I would read to them. And a lot of the kids would ask me where the soft drinks were.
Yeah, right.
They were always looking for that. And when I said they were, like, one time I made organic brownies, and they're like, organic!
Yeah, right.
Like, that meant that they were going to taste bad because it sounded healthy because it was organic. Well, I know that they weren't healthy, but at least they didn't have pesticides in them.
Well, look what's happened in schools today, including Shia's school when she was out in Wagner Ranch in Orinda. they had a garden where all the kids participated. They grew their own food. They cooked their own food to celebrate at the end of the year what it was like. And they took great delight in it. And in general, those programs are doing very well.
I know. And they do that at the Canyon School, too, that's between Moraga and Montclair.
And so Berkeley does, too. The whole, I don't know if all the schools in Berkeley do, but a lot of them do. And we're getting the idea that nutrition matters. What you eat does make a big difference.
And I'll bet the teachers are pleased, too, because they don't have the same behavioral problems.
There you go. Maybe the sale of Ritalin and Concerta and some of those drugs will start to go down. It's amazing. So when we're looking at what we eat, we need to pay attention to whole foods, things that are like when they come out of the ground. If it looks like a strawberry or a potato or a watermelon, eat it. That's good.
Well, you always say that, but that could also be genetically engineered.
Got to watch out today for that because that's a disaster.
It's not required that they be labeled, so you have to be on the lookout.
Can you imagine the stupidity of the people in California who voted against wanting to know what was in their foods? The billions of dollars that the advertisers spent that make GMO products was very influential. In fact, there were even doctors who had the audacity to make a commercial saying, well, I don't see anything wrong with genetically modified food. Well, of course you don't, you bloody idiot. It's because you don't know enough about it. That's what I'd have to say. I really got frustrated when I was listening to the doctors on the radio and television promoting that GMO food was just fine.
Well, they're obviously getting paid a lot of money to do that.
Well, they must have, and they obviously know nothing about nutrition. It's really irritating to me for people to have opinions about things that are sensitive, and they don't really have any fundamental basic knowledge about it.
And what's happened is now some of these GMO crops are polluting the other crops that are organic.
You can't separate them.
So
that's right.
Sometimes you're getting some of that even if you think that you're not. But the safest way is to try to buy organic food.
Yeah, if it looks like food, it's whole food. If it comes in a package, it's not a package. It's something that's been modified a lot and is probably not fit to be considered good for human consumption.
There might be more nutrition in the package.
Well,
than in the content.
Well, you're right. I mean, when you look at the kinds of challenges we have in healthcare and how important nutrition is in setting the stage for our bodies being able to build the hormones and the immune defenses that we have and the enzymes, et cetera, that are required to perform its metabolism properly. You don't take it in, you're simply out of luck. You can't make it. And if you're making something you don't know much about that's genetically engineered, you really got problems that are going to come down the pike because you don't understand enough about it. Well, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki, and it's time for Nurse Vicki's first 2020 tip on stress management. We can all use a bit of that, I think. And then we'll be right back with a simple nutritional treatment for dry eyes that actually really works.
Recently, there was a course on stress management, and the speaker was this confident lady who walked around the room while leading and explaining stress management to the audience with a raised glass of water. And everybody knew that she was going to ask the ultimate question, half empty or half full.
Right.
But she fooled them all. How heavy is this glass of water? Mm. Well, the answers called out range from 8 ounces to 20 ounces. And her answer was, the absolute weight doesn't matter. It depends on how long I hold it. If I hold it for a minute, that's not a problem. If I hold it for an hour, I'll have an ache in my right arm. If I hold it for a day, you'll probably have to call an ambulance.
Right.
Well, in each case, it's the same weight. But the longer I hold it, the heavier it becomes. Mm. And that's the way it is with stress. If we carry our burdens all the time, sooner or later, as the burden becomes increasingly heavy, we won't be able to carry on. And as with the glass of water, you might have to put it down for a while and rest before holding it again. When we're refreshed, we can carry on with the burden because holding stress longer and better each time you practice it. So as early in the evening as you can, put down all your burdens. Don't carry them through the evening and into the night, and then pick them up tomorrow. Except the fact that some days you're the pigeon and some days you're the statue.
Right on.
And always keep your words soft and sweet, just in case you have to eat them.
Too true.
Always read stuff that will make you look good if you die in the middle of it.
Oh, my God. Now you're getting desperate, but okay.
Drive carefully. It's not only cars that can be recalled by their maker.
That's true.
If you can't be kind, at least have the decency to be vague.
That's great.
Now, here's an oldie worth repeating. If you lend somebody $20 and see that person and don't see that person again, it was probably worth it.
Right.
It may be that your sole purpose in life is simply to serve as a warning to others.
Hmm.
Never buy a car you can't push. Never put both feet in your mouth at the same time, because then you won't have a leg to stand on.
All right.
Nobody cares if you can't dance well. Just get up and dance.
Right.
Since it's the early worm that gets eaten by the bird, sleep late. Hi-ho, hi-ho. Hi-ho the Dario. The second mouse gets the cheese. When everything's coming your way, you're in the wrong lane.
True.
Birthdays are good for you. The more you have, the longer you live. And last but not least, some mistakes are too much fun to make only once.
So true.
Oh, and save the earth. It's the only planet with chocolate.
That could be right.
I think.
I think, right. Oh, that's great advice. A little levity goes a long way,
doesn't it? Yeah. A few years ago, we rarely heard of dry eyes. And now it seems to be so popular that there are even eye drop ads on TV for dry eye sufferers. So we're going to be talking about what it is, why we get it, and what safely can be used to treat it. So let's start by talking about the study for treating dry eye nutritionally.
Yeah, this is very interesting because, you know, like we were talking about earlier, we don't think of nutrition usually as one of the first things to consider when something goes wrong. But if you know much about essential fatty acids, those are those fats that we can't make ourselves, but if we don't take in, we would die. So we have to have them.
That are good for our brain and
our heart and our muscles
and
everything.
Our mucous membranes.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're a combination of omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids. And in an article that was published in the journal called Cornea, they tested a combination of GLA, EPA, and DHA, which is a combination of omega-3 and omega-6 anti-inflammatory fatty acids that also are important for waterproofing the skin. Now, in this article, they never mentioned that. That's kind of interesting because it is important. And in kids that have ADD and ADHD, they have a defect in their ability to be able to make GLA, EPA, and DHA.
And they have dry skin.
They have dry skin and they have concentrated urine. And it's because... And they urinate a lot. And the problem is they're losing water across their skin. It's the same thing here to an extent. And I'm not saying it's the whole story because reducing inflammation is important and they certainly pay attention to that. But it's also something that helps keeps the cornea moist. So when we're looking at this study that was done, it's a multi-center study that's double-blinded and randomized and placebo-controlled that came out of basically Baylor College of Medicine and Virginia Eye Consultants. They evaluated 38 postmenopausal women who are at kind of a high risk for having it, so it was easier to collect them, with tear dysfunction in both eyes to try this product that we're not going to mention for a good reason, but we'll get to that later. We're not going to mention it because these people who are using this product seem to get good, but they don't need to use the product, which costs a fair amount. You could just make it yourself. You get a little bit of fish oil, a little bit of evening primrose oil, and put in a little solution, and this sounds crude, but your eye is not sterile. You can put your finger in the solution or an eyedropper in it, put a little drop in each eye, and you're going to get this stuff exactly where you need it, and it's going to do what it needs to do.
Well, first, before we go any further, why don't we define really what dry eyes are?
Okay, well, dry eyes occur when our tears aren't able to make enough moisture, and they don't, or if you don't produce enough tears, or if the tears are of poor quality. And usually you know you have it when you have symptoms like stinging and burning or a scratchy sensation. You may have a little bit of stringy mucus in your eyes. There may be some increased eye irritation when you're exposed to smoke or wind, and your eyes just may get tired.
Well, and there's some inflammation there that can often cause it too.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought it was interesting that postmenopausal menopausal women often have tear dysfunction.
I know. I'm not sure why that is. It may have
something to do with the hormone.
Well, we always blame it on that when it happens there. And it
they say when you go through menopause, you dry up. So.
Well, maybe your eyes dry up, too. That's a good one. You could be right.
But also from having an irregular corneal surface. Mm-hmm. So the cornea
there's something inflamed there. That's right.
Bumpy or something.
Well, tears are made of a complex mixture of water, essential fatty acids, and mucus. And they're in layer. It's in the layers where the you have so that they're separate to an extent. And if you're short on any of the oils that are necessary, which are produced by those little glands that are in your eyelids, if you're short in those, you don't have a way of covering the water surface or the water portion of this of your tears, and it evaporates too fast, and you wind up with a dry eye.
I also like to mention some of the things that are associated with dry eye so that people will be aware of it. Mm-hmm. Like if you work at your computer too long, mm-hmm. if you're in a dry environment, mm-hmm. maybe you could use a humidifier or something. If you've had LASIK surgery, some certain drugs, even like antihistamines and so forth, mm-hmm. Wearing contacts, having allergies, having a scratched cornea, pollution in the air and smoking and diabetes and autoimmune disease. Those are things that are definitely associated with dry eye. And on TV, we see ads for some oral prescriptions like Restasis. Well, Restasis is also known as cyclosporin, and you can get systemic side effects from that. What it does is it's a chemotherapy-type drug,
exactly.
And it kills the immune system.
Exactly.
And sometimes people use steroids also. We all know that all those things can have side effects. And the topical medication, mm-hmm. like the eye drops, mm-hmm. can have toxic effects. So,
absolutely. All these things are important.
So these are the reasons why we're trying to promote doing something healthy, like
right.
with the GLA, EPA, and DHA.
And that's so simple. That's what we should be thinking about. So the first thing to do maybe is just take in a little fish oil and a little GLA, which is evening primrose oil. And that should solve a lot of the problem that we have. You could even, as I said, put it directly in your eye, put a little drop at bedtime in your eye, and you may find after a few weeks it's better.
And what about vitamin A?
Another really good point. If we're low on vitamin A, we can't make all the things that are in tears properly. So this is a simple thing a lot of the time to solve, and we should be looking to simple ways to approach it rather than looking for a chemotherapy approach or something in that arena. It's time for a network station break. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Lynn Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. And when we come back, we'll be talking about what's the best way to manage atrial fibrillation to reduce strokes. So stay tuned for more Prescriptions for Health Radio. Welcome back to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki.
Medications are often ineffective in treating atrial fibrillation, which is a chaotic heart muscle contraction in the upper chambers of the heart where it kind of like quivers.
Right.
And it causes the blood to pool. Mm-hmm. And it often forms clots that can be carried to the brain and cause a stroke. So we're going to talk about other methods to treat atrial fibrillation and a new heart procedure that's more effective than the antiarrhythmic drugs and the anticoagulant medications.
Yeah, right. We've come a long way in how we treat people who have atrial fibrillation. If we catch it early enough, there's a lot we can do to convert it back into the normal sinus rhythm. That's the usual rhythm that the heart has. And if we're in that situation, there are a lot of ways that we can do it. The old way was to do cardioversion. We used to do like defibrillate somebody, and they'd have a period.
They'd shock their heart.
Shock the heart, and they'd be, of course, anesthetized. And it would stop all the heartbeat, and it would start over again, and it might kick in that situation a lot of the time. This time, without atrial fibrillation and a normal rhythm. Now, you could do that, and it's a big deal to do. Or you could use, in the old days, we used digitalis to try and slow the heart rate down and sometimes convert it. and a drug called quinidine, which was very useful at that time, but it has lots of side effects and complications, sometimes causing rhythm disturbances worse than the atrial fibrillation.
Well, you know, with 5 million Americans and 15% of them with atrial fibrillation that cause the strokes, I think it's important that maybe we kind of start out with talking about who gets this, because it's something that happens with age and then when people are sick or have things like diabetes and high blood pressure.
Right. And when that happens now, this procedure we're talking about that's called an ablation, we go ahead and we thread a catheter into the heart and into the top part of the heart called the atrium on the right side. And when that catheter is in there, we have a way of looking at where the rhythms that are abnormal that cause atrial fibrillation are coming from. And when we can identify that, all we do is run a little electrical cautery to that area and, like, fry that area so it's no longer active. And
so if you're cauterizing it.
You're cauterizing it. And basically, when
killing that little spot.
You're killing. It's a little tiny spot. It doesn't interfere with the contraction of the heart in any significant way. And what you wind up with is a heart that very often will beat in a normal sinus rhythm, which is a big advantage because you're not at risk for developing a stroke, as it turns out from the study, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And you also get a little bit better cardiac output. When you have the atrium contract, top part of the part contracting, it pushes blood as the ventricle fills and then overfills it just a little bit, so that it has a much stronger contraction when the atrium is working. But when it's just fibrillating or quivering, it doesn't have what we call that atrial kick. And so a lot of people who have limited heart function to start with will go into florid congestive heart failure.
What are some of the symptoms that people have when they have atrial fibrillation?
Well, they get this rapid heartbeat, and you can feel it. It might be as high as 200 times a minute in some people.
How would they notice it?
Well, it's this big thumping in your chest, and you feel real weak. The cardiac output drops if the rate is real fast, and you feel lightheaded, and you may faint. A lot of people do.
So as we're aging, it sounds like it might be a good idea for people to take, another good reason for people to take fish oil, because that prevents atrial fib, right?
Well, it helps to. I mean, it's not going to guarantee anything, but it's one of those simple, non-aggressive, non-invasive approaches that does a lot of other good things. It doesn't really have side effects that will help protect against that. It also helps protect against ventricular rhythms. That means rhythms coming from the bottom part of the heart, which are usually far more serious.
Those can be deadly.
Yeah.
When you call a code, 911.
Exactly. That's, you're hearing code blue in the hospital all the time for ventricular fibrillation. So this is an interesting approach to managing these rhythm disturbances that occur in people who, as you said, are older, have diabetes, hypertension, and are aging, or just aging. It's an aging population's illness.
So let's talk about some of the drugs that are used for atrial fibrillation.
Right. Okay. Some of the common ones, of course, we used digitalis in the old days and still use it. I use it still from time to time in somebody who you cannot cardiovert, mean change the rhythm from atrial fibrillation to sinus rhythm, either by doing an ablation or by doing shock to the heart, and you may have to do something. And digitalis has been used for a long, long time.
It slows and strengthens the heartbeat.
It does that. In addition, it may convert sometimes the rhythm of atrial fibrillation back to normal sinus rhythm, which is what you'd like to have.
And so then often people are on these anticoagulants that I mentioned at the beginning.
Yeah.
Coumadin.
Yeah, Coumadin or warfarin is something that has lots of side effects to it.
A blood thinner, so you could bleed from it, and it can cause osteoporosis,
It
right?
can also cause aortic valve calcifications and promote the development of arteriosclerosis. A lot of people don't know that, and it has to do with vitamin K deficiency. If you want to learn more about that, go to drsaputo.com and put vitamin K in the search box, and up will come this video that you and I made about a year ago that talks about that. So the anticoagulation is important, though, because it reduces the stroke risk from in the vicinity of, I'd say, 4 or 5% to about half that.
So sometimes it's worth the risk of taking a drug that could have side effects to save your life.
Well, or to prevent a stroke, which is a huge thing. And you're right, a lot of them are lethal. So anticoagulation is something to really consider. Now, that we've got a lot of new anticoagulants coming out, things like Pradaxa, which are these new ones that you can take once a day that have a very powerful effect that you can't reverse, that I think shouldn't even be used. I'm not much for wanting to use drugs that are in this new category. I think they are drugs looking for a use someplace, and of course they make money. And another one of those drugs is Xarelto. And the big advantage of one over the other is you take one once a day and you take the other twice a day. Well, that's not the biggest issue. But with with Coumadin, you have to do these clotting times, this prothrombin time.
In other words, you have to have lab work done.
Yeah, which nobody wants to do. So it's much better to try and solve the problem without having to use drugs for both controlling the heart rate or converting back to the normal sinus rhythm, or to have to use anticoagulants. And that's why this approach of using ablation is really great.
And then also there are medications that are frequently used off-label.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told the story before, but I'm going to tell it again about when my mother had atrial fibrillation several years ago. And we were coming home from a radio show, and I called her because she was being discharged. My brother had just taken her to the pharmacy. And we'd been reading in the news, in our Contra Costa Times, actually, there'd been a series of articles about this particular drug called amiodarone and all the horrible side effects that a person could get from it. It was just like week after week they were talking about these. And I said, what's the name of the drug that you just picked up? And of course it was amiodarone. And I said, don't take it.
Right.
And she said, but we just paid $100 for it.
Right.
I said, I don't care. Just don't take it. So you tell the rest of it when you talk to the doctor, because he was a cardiologist and prescribed it a lot.
Well, he's a friend of mine. I called him and said, what are we doing here? And he says, well, we're just using a little amiodarone. You know, it's not a huge dose. And I know there are problems with it. I said, well, I agree with you. There are problems with it. And by the way, it's not even recommended for atrial fibrillation. He goes, oh, yes, it is. And I said, well, no, it's not.
For ventricular fibrillation.
Well, for that and other ventricular rhythm disturbances, it is. But it was conventional it's conventional in medicine today to use this drug to control refractory atrial fibrillation.
What's that mean?
One that you can't convert back into a rhythm that's normal for the heart. And so we discussed it for a while and finally decided that we would not use the drug and use other approaches to try and manage it, which is, of course, what we've done. So the whole topic of atrial fibrillation is really one that's fairly complicated, but one that we can solve. And I think that we've made some major breakthroughs. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. And we'll be back after Nurse Vicki's final 2020 tip on cranky old man. When we come back, we'll be talking about, do cranberries really prevent urinary and other infections? And can flame retardants raise estrogen levels?
Here's a poem that I read several years ago, and it's a great reminder and a great lesson about an old man that died in the geriatric ward of a nursing home in an Australian country town. And it was believed that he had nothing left of value. And later, when the nurses were going through his meager possessions, they found this poem. And its quality and content so impressed the staff that copies were made and distributed to every nurse in the hospital. And one nurse took her copy to Melbourne, and the old man's sole bequest to posterity has since appeared in the Christmas editions of magazines around the country and appearing in magazines for mental health. A slide presentation has also been made based on his simple but eloquent poem. And this old man, with nothing left to give to the world, is now the author of this anonymous poem winging across the internet. It's called Cranky Old Man. What do you see, nurses? What do you see? What are you thinking when you're looking at me? A cranky old man, not very wise, uncertain of habit, with faraway eyes, who dribbles his food and makes no reply. When you say in a loud voice, I do wish you'd try. Who seems not to notice the things that you do, and forever is losing a sock or a shoe, who resisting or not lets you do as you will, with bathing and feeding the long day to fill. Is that what you're thinking? Is that what you see? Then open your eyes, nurse. You're not looking at me. I'll tell you who I am as I sit here so still, as I do at your bidding, as I eat at your will. I'm a small child of 10 with a father and mother, brothers and sisters who love one another. A young boy of 16 with wings on his feet, dreaming that soon a lover he'll meet. A groom, soon at 20, my heart gives a leap, remembering the vows that I promised to keep. At 25 now, I have young of my own who need me to guide a secure, happy home. A man of 30, my young now grown fast, bound to each other with ties that should last. At 40, my sons have grown and are gone, but my woman is beside me to see I don't mourn. At 50, once more, babies play round my knee. Again, we know children, my loved one and me. Dark days are upon me. My wife is now dead. I look at the future. I shudder with dread. For my young are all rearing young of their own, and I think of the years and the love that I've known. I'm now an old man, and nature is cruel. It's just to make old age look like a fool. The body, it crumbles, grace and vigor depart. There is now a stone where I once had a heart. But inside this old carcass, a young man still dwells, and now and again, my heart, my battered heart swells. I remember the joys, I remember the pain, and I'm loving and living life over again. I think of the years, all too few, gone too fast, and accept the stark fact that nothing can last. So open your eyes, people. Open and see, not a cranky old man. Look closer, see me. Remember this poem when you next meet an older person who you might brush aside without looking at the young soul within. We will all one day be there too. And the best and most beautiful things of this world can't be seen or touched. They must be felt by the heart.
Wow, that's beautiful. And it's so true too. I think especially of younger people who don't connect or understand what aging is all about. It's sort of like when we're young, we think we know it all and nobody else knows what we know, and we want to do it our way. And thank God we've got parents and grandparents that will look over us and tell us no, or tell us or support us depending on what we need.
And when we're young, it seems like we're never going to be old, you know?
No. And then suddenly, you know, we're older and wonder where all the years go.
And even though we're older, I don't feel old inside.
You're not. And you're still my bride.
Well, remember Julie Andrews singing, "A spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down."
Indeed.
Wasn't it? Excuse me, I can't sing, I guess.
Yes, you can.
But isn't it nice when we don't have to take bitter medicine or swallow a horse pill when we're sick?
Mm-hmm.
So here's a nutritional treatment that prevents bacterial infections. Organic cranberry juice for urinary tract infections is often questioned as to whether it's myth or scientific fact. So we're going to talk about new cranberry juice findings.
Right. Well, they may be new, but this whole business of cranberry is old, and it's been around for time immemorial. The secrets that we learn about food a lot of the time we dismiss as we turn more to what we call science. And yet when we're looking at science, it really is geared more towards, is this going to bring a return on investment? So you don't see so much money being spent in research by the National Institutes of Health, which is, of course, where it should happen because it's the government that funds that. Should be looking at natural things like this that are safe, don't have that much in the way of side effects. We're always looking for something that's pure, that's got the magic ingredients separated out from the rest. And we forget about the whole plant or the whole fruit or the whole of whatever it is that we're dealing with that has really magical effects that we've been prepared to live with for thousands of years. And when we're looking at cranberry, as was published in this journal, Canadian Journal of Microbiology, in August of 2013, they reviewed some of this stuff and came up with some wonderful ideas about how to use it.
And what's new is that not only does cranberry juice prevent bacteria that's already present, but it hinders bacteria from sticking to the walls of the urinary tract, and then it controls the spread of infection also by hindering the movement of the bacteria.
Right. It paralyzes the flagellum, which is a little tail on the bacteria that makes it go. And that keeps it from being able to spread. So with the idea of suppressing its movement and preventing it from sticking to the walls of the urinary tract, you've got a really powerful, wonderful approach here that's natural And most of it, I think, has been traced back to a non-metabolizable sugar by the human body called D-mannose.
Yeah, you talk about that frequently for urinary tract infection.
Well, I prefer to do that because it's natural and doesn't have so much of the potential side effects, and it's really not going to be wiping out so many microbes in the intestinal tract, which is my concern, is because that ecosystem in the gut is extremely important. And if it gets out of balance, our health gets out of balance. And we're beginning to realize that in the mainstream of medicine, although those of us in nutritional medicine have known this for 40 years and have been respecting that. And so here we are at a place where we're beginning to appreciate the magic of Mother Nature and how she puts things together and does it in a way that blends perfectly with what our needs are. And we should learn from that.
Well, I thought it was interesting also that it reduces the bacterial urease, which is an enzyme that contributes to the virulence of infections.
Yeah, so.
So this is a good alternative to antibiotics because there's so much resistance to antibiotics.
Well, that
nowadays.
Plus it wipes out the protective nature of the microflora in the intestinal tract.
So we need probably more than just drinking the juice. So if you take it in a powder form,
right?
How much do you
take? You take about a teaspoon two or three times a day. You can't metabolize it. It's not going to make you fat. It doesn't work like fructose does, and it's not like glucose. It's not empty calories. It's looking for the effect, the almost magical effect of suppressing the urinary tract infections that get
there. Because the bacteria can't metabolize the sugar, is that?
Well, they can't use it, and it doesn't give them energy, that's for sure. But somehow it keeps them from sticking, and it keeps them from moving. Two things that they depend upon if things are going to be.
Yeah, so one of the things they were excited about was that there's a potential use here in catheters because mm-hmm. many times catheters contribute to urinary tract infections.
And yes, and to all other kinds of infections too. Anything that has got a silicone surface to it, you can impregnate with this D-mannose or with cranberry extract. And it'll introduce into that the ability to be able to stop some infections from spreading or from sticking.
I think it's good to notice some of the other things about cranberry juice mm-hmm. that are healthy also, because it might be a good idea for people to just switch out their normal breakfast fruit juice drink or fruit and maybe switch it with cranberry juice once in a while. Because cranberry juice is high in vitamin C and A and B carotene and calcium and phosphorus and sodium and potassium and fiber.
Yeah, it does a lot of good things.
Yeah, so it's good for our immunity. It has antioxidants. It's reported to destroy carcinogens, protect us from heart disease and tooth decay. It raises our good cholesterol, the HDL, mm-hmm. and it helps to prevent kidney stones. So,
well, isn't that cool?
Yeah. So get organic, unsweetened cranberry juice and be sure to read the ingredients and make sure they don't slip sugar and other things.
Well,
in
the high fructose corn syrup is what you expect they're going to do because it's cheap and because it still works. So we have a lot to look and respect about food, just the way it's made by Mother Nature. There's no better approach to supporting wellness than to consume healthy foods that haven't been processed or refined or had pesticides or herbicides applied to them or that are or changed by some GMO approach. Mother Nature knows what she's doing. We don't even begin to understand what's happening at the cellular level that has to do with the biochemistry of a cell and how it works, let alone understand all the effects of why a cranberry is made like a cranberry is made or a prune is made like a prune is made. These are all things that Mother Nature, in her infinite wisdom, has allowed us to adapt to over thousands of years that gives us that kind of benefit that comes from living within nature without
changing it. We're
always thinking
we can do it better.
Well, we think we can, but we make a big mistake, so we need to be careful of that.
When my children were little, I remember when they first invented flame retardants and fire retardants.
That was a big deal because of the fires.
Yeah, and we thought it was a great idea, especially to have it in pajamas for your babies. And
everything that could burn.
Yeah,
sure.
And especially at Christmas time and in the winter when there was a fire in the fireplace and all that kind of thing. And so, of course, we want to prevent fires, and we're surrounded by these fire retardants. And they mimic estrogens. And now we found out that they are disrupting our hormones. So we're going to talk about why fire retardants or flame retardants are bad and what they're doing to us and our children.
Well, it's the same old story, Vicki. If we can find a way to make a dollar on something and it makes sense, what we do is look at the positive side of what we're trying to promote and then kind of discourage looking at the negative side of things and just come out with it on the market and start selling it. And the concept is easy to buy because it makes sense that you don't want to have your children burning or have a house that's burning down or have any kind of
mattress or furniture. I mean, yeah, it's in everything.
Exactly.
Especially, well, I say everything. It's in like electronics, upholstered furniture, cars, foam, building materials,
right,
clothing, bedding, mattresses, carpets,
yeah,
and so forth.
Sure. And it gets in the air and the dust and it gets in our food. And kids are particularly vulnerable to it because they've always got their hands in their mouth, right?
Yeah.
And so the levels, if you measure them in toddlers and preschoolers, the levels are about three times as high as they are in adults, which is kind of a surprise because you think it would just be cumulative, but it's not.
Yes, an environmental working group found that these chemicals are in our blood and in our breast milk.
Mm-hmm.
But this is really important because these xenoestrogens can affect our growth and development, reproduction, stress response, energy levels.
Right. So when Vicki's talking about a xenoestrogen, what she means is something like a pesticide, of a petroleum product, a plastic, or now these brominated flame retardants that have an effect on the body by acting like estrogens themselves. And in addition, they bind to inhibit an enzyme called estrogen sulfotransferase that could result in the body having too much estrogen because it's what is used to detoxify and remove estrogens from the body. And, of course, estrogens are cancer promoters. And the risk of developing a cancer goes way up when our levels go way up. And here's one more thing now in the environment that puts us at risk for that.
And Americans have 10 times the levels of the Europeans or the Japanese, and it's on the rise because these people seem to, the other countries have standards that are higher.
Yeah, well, maybe they care more. Maybe they're less into return on investment. Maybe they're just concerned about what they're doing and have higher standards for trying to do things that are right.
This, and also, the scientists are questioning this cumulative effect.
Well, they should, for sure, because what we're looking at is a lot of toxins in small amounts in lots of places adding up, and it's not just in the environment, it's in our bodies. When the Environmental Working Group looked at toxic levels of different kinds of chemicals in the body about 10 years or 15 years ago, they looked at 9 people scattered throughout different parts of the U.S., and what they found was it didn't matter if you lived in an area where there was, it seemed like it was really clean, like on the Pacific Coast, or if you're in the middle of New York City or Chicago or L.A., everybody, when they're looking for a couple of hundred, measured for a couple of hundred different toxins in the body, nobody had less than 70. And over time, these build up. And when they build up, they put you at risk for developing all these metabolic changes that we experience that takes our body out of its comfort zone and challenges it to try and adapt to the changes that we have in the environment that are toxic.
Well, we definitely need safer alternatives because we are living in a sea of toxins in our water and our food and our air.
Uh-huh.
And other thing is that we also find hormone disruptors in our commercial cosmetics. So we need to be aware of our environment so we can make a change and not be a victim to this.
Right. We were listening to Katie Couric interview somebody today. That really just
a pediatrician.
Just, she's a dermatologist.
Oh, that was right.
Yeah. And it was really stupid. And it was a money thing probably that was conflicted with interest because they're saying, oh, it's only a little bit. It doesn't count. And it doesn't add up that much, and so we don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, like the lead in your lipstick and...
Oh, and all the other toxins, the PCBs, all the things that are in the environment that do that. So we have to keep in mind that every little thing adds up, and when it does, it has consequences that are a disaster. All right, we're at the end of the show, and we want to remind you that we'll be back to talk about what's new in the news in health the first and third Mondays of every month on PRN.FM and DrSaputo.com. From 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time and 7 to 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Prescriptions for Health will also be available 24/7 on PRN.FM.
And if you enjoyed today's show and you'd like to have more information on the topics we discussed, go to Dr. Saputo Radio on DrSaputo.com and check out our fast track videos. And remember, a healthy lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
Have a wonderful time before the next show. We'll see you next time.